This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Will you sleep? So carelessly.
This is Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Mark. Barrett Davis has just released his debut album. It's been a long time in the making. In fact, he started one of the songs over 10 years ago. But that's not to say he hasn't been busy. That's actually why it's taken so long for this release. Music has always been a huge part of his life. His dad is a blues guitarist who's played with Marshall Tucker and Jeannie C. Riley, which should be a podcast unto itself. His mom is a singer who helped train his sister, who now sings opera in Amsterdam. Barrett was playing with his dad as well as his own band, the Foxfire, for years when he decided to step away and take a break. But he had met his wife, started a family, and needed to give them time. He focused on construction and building a business in North Carolina, where he grew up. And when he decided the time was right, he took his time. He incorporated everything he could from his favorite artists and the surrounding Appalachian music, and has released The Ballad of Aesop Finn. And there's a story behind everything with the album. And that extends to the album title, as well as the album length. Nothing is left to chance here. Barrett has a deep connection to this music, to Appalachia, and surprisingly, Gouda cheese. So we recorded this right around the time of the World Cup and college football playoffs, so we even venture into sports just a little bit. So give Barrett a follow on Instagram at Barrett Davis Music, Facebook Barrett Davis Music, or his website, BarrettDavisMusic.com. Pick up The Ballad of Aesop Finn wherever you buy music, stream it, share it, get it out there. Follow us at Performance ANX on Twitter and Instagram. Reach out to us through those platforms or the performanceanxietypod@gmail.com. You can send us a cup of coffee at ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety or buy something with our logo at performanceanx.threadless.com. And now we get to the roots of Barrett Davis on Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening in. It's been a joy talking to Mark Shea from Performance Anxiety. If you want to find out more about me, Barrett Davis, and the band, please take a look at BarrettDavisMusic.com. Take a look at Barrett Davis Music on Instagram and Barrett Davis on Facebook. And follow us on Spotify. And please get to know The Ballad of Aesop Finn, our latest release and my debut album.
Nailed it.
Thanks. Yeah, right. Appreciate it, bud. I'm about to run outside just to get better service.
Yeah.
Sit in the car and turn my lights on.
No problem.
Sweet. Been on the run all day.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, we're building A-frame timber frame, which has already been constructed with sit panels. But my company's doing the roof on it, the install, the trim,
okay,
and like the actual roofing and the siding. It's it's kind of a bear.
Yeah.
we've never done anything that steep, and I've been doing carpentry for 10 years, so it's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite intense.
I bet my house isn't exactly an A-frame, but I've got a really steep roof, so I can kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah. No, it's insane. Yeah, the house is so crowded. We live in a really small little space, but it's great.
Oh, man. That makes the family closer.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, literally, like, the kids are 5 feet from my bed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, most of my dad time spent outside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
It could be worse, you know?
Yeah, I mean, heck, my job's outside. Well, but at least my day job's outside. Dad time's outside.
Yeah. I
mean, yeah, it's great.
All right. So thank you for coming on. I have listened to your debut album, The Ballad of Aesop Finn, and I thought it was awesome. I haven't been enjoying it since the first listen. But what I like to do is to find out how you got to the point of creating that album. So I like to start at the beginning. And when did music really start making an impact in your life? Is there a lot of it in the family? Was there a lot growing up?
Yeah, there's a ton. Growing up in my family, there was a lot of music. Mom was a classical pianist. Wow. She would always be accompanying folks. And then she started kind of grooming my sisters in singing. And also the same with my dad, because he's a blues musician and a singer-songwriter.
Oh,
and he would do the same. He would basically, like, teach them how to, well, I don't know about teach them, but show them how to orchestrate a song in his own way. And the two of them were pretty close like that, but still kind of separate. They're still together after like 40 years. So lots of music going on. Yeah. Always lots of music going on in our house. And then I started getting influenced by piano at that time. And it kind of sparked like a really big interest in me wanting a drum set. And then, you know how all that goes.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit about the rhythm. And I broke my arm and I started doing stringed instruments as therapy on like a little mini ukulele that my cousin John gave me. And then from there, I just picked up the guitar because it was great on the ukulele. I went through the whole Beatles One album.
I never thought of that as a way to do therapy.
Yeah, it's great. I actually have a piece of metal in my arm right now, and the bone's growing around it and stuff. It's great.
Oh, I know what you mean. I work for my day job. I work for a spinal implant company, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's some real stuff.
Yeah,
some
nasty stuff, man. But so were your parents professional musicians, or was it something that they did in their spare time and a little extra money here and there, playing in bands, doing gigs?
Well, Mom always tried to make it professional as possible with the colleges and stuff. She was always roped in with at least one university.
Oh, cool.
Working about once or twice a week with that kind of stuff and accompaniments. Dad, he started getting into music, I think, right after he got his master's in Native American studies and archaeology. And that was, started playing at the Greystone Inn, which is a place where I live at on the regular. That's kind of when, at least when that started happening for him as a day job, that's when I started playing music every day with him for, I think, like 4 years.
Oh, so wow.
Yeah, that became a real big part of the process because we were entertaining people like at the Greystone from all over. Cliff Williams from AC/DC was always there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of different people, mostly just like lawyers and doctors. And, you know, a few people have mentioned that come by just sporadically over the years, and that was a great experience for me to learn professionalism. And like, you don't perform the same way as you would at a venue because no one's looking at you, but it's definitely like a listening room to me. It feels like the concert series, but like every day, you know.
Wow.
There's no plug-in or anything, so we would play it just like that all the time.
Yeah,
it's kind of I guess it's bad now because I don't really want to play any of those types of gigs anymore unless it's like a real concert series, then of course.
Right.
But I have a hard time with some of the private and the quiet gigs because I'm just like, and it even did a number on me for the breweries as well.
Oh, really?
Just because I got such a long dose of it early on. And it became work so fast. So I guess I didn't have too many qualms taking a big long break and having kids for a minute with my wife before kind of making another debut or a real debut album under my solo name.
So at what point did you start taking music really seriously? I mean, was that with your dad, or I mean, were there any other, was that the career path you wanted to take?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't, convenient at the time, because I was enjoying like another job I was doing, but then I ended up stopping that to go to music full time. And then it became an obsession alongside of playing in this group. I started the Foxfire with my friends back in the day. And we got to play some nice stuff by some nice gigs by recommendation of Woody Platt. We ended up doing a Colorado tour, a bunch of radio shows and things like that.
Oh, cool.
A bunch of regional tours. But that was all running side by side when I was playing at the Greystone. And it was everyday music for sure for about 5 years.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, everybody. I've got a great sponsor that I want to talk to you about. For a long time, I wondered if CBD was something that might benefit me, but I had no idea how to find out. I didn't know what products were available, what companies were reputable, and really even what questions to ask to get the answers I needed. That's why I'm so glad I found Pure Spectrum CBD. They helped me discover what CBD could do for me. They were awesome at determining what my needs were, and they helped me find a starting point. I started with the tincture and the isolate, but there's also gummies, topicals, mints, and a lot more. Pure Spectrum not only has CBD products for wellness, they also have them for fitness and recovery. There's even CBD for your pets. The website has a ton of information, and chat options are available. And all their products are third-party tested, and the results are available right on their website. So go to purespectrumcbd.com to do your own research, and when you check out, use code PERFORMANCEANX for 15% off your order. Check them out on Instagram at Pure Spectrum Hemp and subscribe to their email list for sales, new products, and updates. Pure Spectrum, refined phytocannabinoid wellness products for all lifestyles.
And so all this is happening like Western North Carolina area then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Does the music of that era, that's considered the Appalachian area. Am I correct definitely. With that? All right, yeah, so is that a big part of your musical background? Were you listening to that a lot growing up, or were you more listening to rock or just a mix of everything?
Well, as far as what I was listening to, I'm not a big listener of just strictly bluegrass, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was everything as far as what I was taking in. I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, The Killers, even.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, that was an obsession of mine, the stage presence and studying really good artists like Springsteen, Tom Petty, and Michael Jackson. And for my era, it was the Killers, because that was who I was watching that was like, you know, up on stage, really doing a great job with the stage presence and kind of communicating with the crowd.
Okay.
Yeah, I learned a whole lot just, I guess, a couple of years ago. I played in Dover, Delaware with the Pretty Little Goat Band for Firefly Music Fest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Yeah, we played on the Treehouse stage, which was huge for us,
nice.
I guess, as a band. And I left that band the same year just to kind of wrap this project up because it's just been getting crazy.
Yeah.
but I remember watching Brandon Flowers from the Killers, and I was taking notes the whole time. I was just like very impressed.
I'd love to see you incorporate a little Michael Jackson into your stage show. That would be impressive.
Oh, yeah, man. I, when it comes to that stuff, I just think of I got a couple of buddies that talk to me about music that are in my group. But I mean, they talk to me about my music and their commentary on it in private. And it is like really hard for people to describe the genre of the live show because it is so eclectic.
Oh,
I mean,
nice.
the concert we had for the full band, the 7-piece, and we had some trombone,
oh,
and of course,
wow,
like keys and it bouncing back from not always just the dobro, but pedal steel and lap steel and,
oh man.
Yeah. And drums with sticks, you know, not just brushing. So it's like, it's definitely different. I was feeling some Neil Young vibes for the first time in my life when I listened back to, and some Willie Nelson vibes.
Oh,
when I was
awesome.
Listening back to the live session, I was like, this is awesome. So it's evolving for sure in all the best ways. But yeah, that it's, you won't quite hear any one artist coming through, but it is kind of a problem of mine to just like, you know, stay like a one track mind. So the next album is definitely not going to sound as bluegrassy, but it was a big deal for me growing up here because that is one of the biggest parts of music here in Appalachia. It's,
yeah,
you know, a lot of really good musicians live here and pass on like all their skills to anybody who's willing to hang out with them and listen. And
that is awesome.
Yeah.
But you have had to leave music for a while. How did that happen?
Well, Clint Roberts from the Foxfire had mentioned at one of our bigger festivals how he was wanting to do not the same thing, but just something different. And I was thinking kind of something similar as I was getting kind of more involved and about to marry my wife.
Okay.
And, It worked out at similar times.
So you left music for love instead of jumped in,
yeah,
for love.
Right. Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah. And it was kind of scary, but at the same time, I was pretty much okay with it. I just wanted to experience a job and all that. Like, I guess a more serious job at the same time, because music for me at the time wasn't the same as it is now. Now it's like everything is methodical and planned out.
Ah, you're younger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the time it was wild.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, you left it to marry your wife and start a family. So during that time, did you leave it completely, or were you still writing and keeping up your guitar chops, or did you just put it down completely?
Oh yeah, all these songs on the album, The Ballad of Aesop Finn, are from the past 10 years, and some before that.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I think Your Worth is probably the oldest tune on the record.
You would always say to me that you were my best friend. The wheel of time came to an end. And I would always say to you I'd give up all my fights just to come to you tonight.
But Lazarus, Carolina Still, The Ballad of Aesop Finn, all of those are around like right after I kind of met my wife, and those were, they're not necessarily all really love songs. What was the other one that's on the record? Oh Sleeper is also another one that was written in that period of time. So
love that song.
Such a weight of many fears. Lock the door.
It's funny because some of the songs written before that time, I'm going to add on to the next record because I just started realizing that they're actually really good.
Wow. Man, yeah. You're reaching back.
I am. And I've got two more albums on top of that that I have like planned out that are wow. are things that I've written since I started the project for The Ballad of Aesop Finn.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you're going to do the exact opposite of what everybody's afraid of. So what I hear a lot is that I spent, you know, 5 years writing the songs that became the debut album. It went pretty well. We toured for a year and then the record label is like, all right, time to make your next album. And we don't have anything. So you've already got the next 3 or 4 albums planned out. That's awesome.
I do. Yeah, I definitely do. And my dad's part of it, too. That's I think the fourth album, I shouldn't put it on the back burner as the fourth. I should probably put it at the first, given his age and like what he needs right now. But it's still undecided, so I won't say anything. But he's got like probably 100 good songs. And I've got 10 on my mind that I've written down. And I really think I want to cut a whole record of it. And I don't think it's going to spoil the... You know how people are always worried about changing genre or flopping back and forth? I don't think it's going to spoil anything at all. Personally,
I love that outlook.
Yeah, I really don't think anything bad could possibly happen at all from that. Because it's another world when you're hearing his songs. And then especially if I was to play them just with my voice and my band, it's a different thing entirely. And it becomes... You know, the vibe of what I'm already doing. But each tune is great, and I've played them in front of people, and people just, like, go berserk over them. So I think they're all special because I'm cherry-picking from an anthology.
You've already piqued my interest. I love the blues anyway, but...
Thank you.
So is it all blues-based?
It's all blues-based country. Nice. A lot of the lyrics are... really much more on the storyteller side of things like country is. And then, you know, the background is from a man who's obsessed with B.B. King and all the blues roots. And then he also spent some time playing with Marshall Tucker. And that was like in the middle of his heavy songwriting time. And he did a little bit where he got a chance to cut a record with Jenny C. Reilly. And
cool.
He was really shy. So I'm pretty sure they shelved it based on what he told me, according to, you know, just, yeah. He was extremely shy, honestly.
Oh, wow.
He did not want to be a lead singer or in a lead position of any kind. So I don't think much happened with that. But
well, we have completely skipped over your debut album. So let's go back and we're on your fourth album already. So we got to go back and figure out how we got to the fourth album now. So what got you back into writing and performing?
I believe the performance was more just me going out in town and seeing all the fun acts in town that are smaller and kind of getting back into the, you know, the contagious bug of just enjoying that and wanting to be a part of it. And then it got a little worse. You can't help but really try at something. So started my band page, booked a few gigs every year for the past 4 years, and that snowballed into me constructing this album. And part of that time was spent, like I said, with Pretty Little Goat.
Ocean.
I've been swimming in its tide. Love rips like an anchor, trying to keep me by your side. Living like hell every day, somehow call you mine. Hope you don't mind waiting, I'm gonna to the line. Hope you don't mind waiting, I'm gonna to the line.
And then as I was with them, I also was able to just really get back into it 100%. And it really helps too, because as I jumped in, I was learning all these new songs on guitar and rhythm, and kind of getting in touch with my roots, if you will, and starting to understand some of the traditional songs that I've never even played before. I was in that band, like Fisher's Hornpipe and stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of vibe was great for me. It got me really 100% back. Okay. Where I just couldn't help but start cutting as many tracks as possible. Started working with Aaron Aiken from the Pink Beds, and he was my old bandmate in the Foxfire, and just a phenomenal producer. And he has like an amazing skill at creating a sonic space for an indie record. The feel of the reverb and just the body of everything. So I knew that would be a really nice blend with bluegrass, and that became an obsession for me to try that out.
Oh, nice.
So yeah.
You're writing this whole time. Did you have a huge catalog of music to pick from, or did you just have these songs specifically picked out for the album?
I had a huge catalog.
Okay.
It was about 30 songs to pick from, I know eight is not enough. The reason we settled on eight is because of Instagram.
Oh, really?
That sounds weird, but like attention spans are out the window. Also, when you're going through press, I had somebody tell me, and this was a great confirmation from Insider Magazine. They were like, that was the easiest album review ever, because I actually listened to the whole thing. I'm like, how many album reviews do they actually listen to the whole thing? I even wonder.
That's a good, you know, I never thought of that, because I listen, when I have somebody coming on, I listen to the whole thing. And if they have a back catalog, I go and I try to listen to that too.
Heck yeah.
So doing a review and not listening to the entire album, I don't even understand how you can do an honest review that way.
I don't know. It is a problem, especially on the ones that are getting hit up every day or multiple times a day. But
all right. So Aesop Finn. Did the album start off as for lack of a better term, like a concept album of was that the idea from the beginning and you just picked the songs that fit the best, or
did it was.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so. Aesop was recorded first because everything about it was indie. Like when you listen to it, it's like, it has like a dreamy aspect that takes you like really far away and back again. And as we kind of pieced it together, it just kept getting better and better. And the more we threw at it, it got better. And even like we bring an artist in, he'd play five songs or she'd play five songs. And we'd be like, well, let's cut that one and that one, because those weren't really great takes. But on Aesop, then that never happened. It just stayed the same way all the way through. It was really nice. And that was our first part of the project that we took out. That was the biggest chunk of meat. And then we sculpted the project around it.
Oh,
it really became a tale of mystery.
Yeah.
You know, Appalachian mystery with all of that.
So I'm going to come clean on this. When I downloaded this from the PR folks and I put it on a thumb drive to listen to in my car, because my car doesn't have a CD player anymore. I don't know when those went away, but my computer imported everything alphabetically. So I listened to your album in alphabetical order, not exactly how you sequenced it.
Okay.
So it's I got a little bit of a different, I guess, feel maybe than you intended. So, but that doesn't take away from the great songwriting, the beautiful harmonies and the melodies. I absolutely, like Aesop Finn, the harmonies in that are incredible. I absolutely love that song.
Among
your voice throughout the whole album, but there's certain songs in particular, like I think it's a fan of Lazarus and Bama Shore. Your voice has a Peter Gabriel quality to it that
cool.
I absolutely love.
Heck yeah.
Maybe a bluegrass Peter Gabriel cover.
That would be wonderful.
I think
I love Peter Gabriel.
Oh, I do too. That's one of the things that kind of kept drawing me back into the music is your the vocals, that quality. And I'm like, this man, it's like you're the Appalachian Peter Gabriel.
That's awesome. Yeah.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Growing up, I was always into all that kind of, you know, the singer-songwriter exploration. And I touch back on a lot of that stuff as much as possible. I really hit hard on Bob Seger this year. It's just been kind of...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like, this is going to be great.
That's
going to like absorb as much of this before we cut the next record. I just love how he's like balls to the wall.
It's
totally unnecessary sometimes, but he's just like, that man just got, he's got to scream them lyrics out.
Oh, he does. I cannot wait to hear what this does for your next album.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
So how did you come up with Aesop Finn, and is there a meaning behind it?
Aesop Finn is, I looked it up for a long time, just trying to find a great meaning for Aesop. As I was crafting the song, and Aesop really means the teller of tales. There's not a deeper meaning to it.
Okay.
Mostly the man became the definition.
So, oh, I like that.
Yeah, which is a spectacle within itself. I mean, he is his own sideshow. It's amazing. So I decided to take that, and then I guess Aesop Finn being his last name. I really like Finn because I thought it was a really cool name. It's also kind of a cultural name. My grandmother's from Glasgow, Scotland.
Oh.
And I have a whole bunch of family in the UK that I've never met. And so I always had that on my mind. And it's not F-I-N-N, which is funny because that's how I should be spelling it, because that means something totally different. I think it means like fair or something.
Oh, okay.
But Finn is spelled F-I-N because it's the end of all tales. Sorry for being long-winded.
No.
The ballad of the end of all tales.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice for your debut album.
Yeah.
The beginning of your career is the end of all tales.
Yeah, that kind of is. It hit me hard, and I was like, this is going to be a really fun creation of a project that'll kind of push the spirit of an album that will, I think, tell a lot of the tales of Appalachia to people that have no idea what Appalachia is.
That's
because it's not a bluegrass album. So I thought that's going to be the biggest thing, is trying to rope in as much of my history as possible into this record. And it was such an important thing to me because my great grandfather was, you know, he came from Barnardsville area, like outside of Asheville, North Carolina. And from there, my family went kind of west and then back again. And now we're here, and I was born in this county. And it's, as I dig and dig, there's just so much history here that I've already got. And that was a big deal for me. Yeah, that's what Carolina still is about. It's for my great-grandfather.
That is awesome.
Sheriff's on the neck, DA's on the edge.
So there is an overarching theme throughout the whole thing. And like I said, for me, it kind of went a little up and probably not arched the same way you wanted it to, since I listened to it alphabetically. But you've got a lot of guests, I guess I want to say guests on the album, people helping you out on it. But before we get into that too much, is the band in the album the band that you play with most of the time, or did you do a lot of the instrumental tracking, or how did that whole situation work out?
When we started the record, most of the male vocals are mine, except for Woody Platt's on Quiver. And then female vocals are my wife's. But when we got into the instrumentation and stuff, I actually picked Owen Grooms from the Goat Band because he does like a claw hammer style. And then he's got another, like a baritone. Just that nylon string was a really good pairing for a record like this, especially if it's going to be geared towards like indie. Mm-hmm. I thought that the softer would be better. And man, he just does such a great job at that because he's claw hammer, but he's also very technical. And that actually helped Aesop Finn kind of become birthed the way that it was. For the keys, the whole record is done by my buddy Derek Gardner. He went to, I think, Birmingham, University of Alabama. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
But
the Blazers.
The guy is insane, man. He's insane. He did all the keys on it and many different variations, mostly Hammond B3 and regular piano.
Oh, nice.
But he chose all those settings. And then for the lap steel, pedal steel, and dobro, mostly Jackson Delaney, but I hired Ryan Stigman, who's been playing with Chatham Rabbits a lot lately.
Okay.
And Ryan Stigman did the pedal steel on Bama Shores and on Aesop Finn, which was a good move. I actually hired him early on before switching to Jackson. And I switched because I like what Jackson does, and I had all the other songs that I wanted to do like in my head. So
okay.
I was really liking the blues. You know? Jackson, he was hitting all the right notes. So that's what happened. And I knew that was good for Carolina Still and a bunch of other songs, especially because he's like a 3-in-1 with the dobro, lap steel, and pedal steel.
Okay, so he's playing the dobro too. Is he playing that throughout the whole album?
Yeah, on Quiver. Jackson nailed Quiver.
He is good.
And Highway 64. Highway 64, we were cutting most of his parts at his place in Barnardsville. He has got a little farmhouse in Barnardsville near the elementary school. We were there like it's an hour and 45 from my house, and it started snowing like crazy. He's like, "You got to go home." I'm like, "This is my last chance, man. I'm not coming back. Not for a minute. Yeah. You know, like 6 months. Try that one again, you know?"
Yeah.
Yeah, I drove home in the snow in a Honda Accord just to grab that. It was great.
Oh my gosh.
Worth every minute of the pucker factor. Yeah. Drive down. Golly.
I would agree, not knowing how deep the snow was, but I'll still agree with you. So
yeah,
you mentioned Bama Shores, which I love. That's the first song I heard. And I love it because I lived in Southeast Alabama for a decade. Also, I would go down to Mobile and Orange Beach and all that area. And that's one reason I think I got into this album so easily was that it opened up to me with Bama Shores. I'm like, I get this.
Heck yeah. That's cool, man. That's really cool. Yeah. Essentially the album starts with Highway 64. As like, you know, the telling of the tale of the whole thing. And as it comes in, it's like you get the spooky dobro and then Mystic Valley and the Celtic Hills.
Mystic Valley of the Celtic Hills, cloaked in isolation with a hunger to distill. And all my labor, if it ain't nothing more, made its ground running down that Highway 64. Lord knows I've been running. Lord knows that I've seen. Lord knows they were gonna take me down and sell me back again. Lord knows I'm in trouble.
That was big for me, especially for the the place I was raised in and getting the ability to tell the story, because I was, as a kid, I was always fantasizing about, you know, the moonshine running and all the stories like that. I got to watch Thunder Road as a child because I was homeschooled. So my life was VHS, you know.
VHS
and Reader's Digest movies. My uncle would send me those. Great uncle would send me those Reader's Digest movies, the Cabin Fever Productions, all that stuff.
Oh, nice.
We would absorb that, and a lot of it was Appalachian based, and some of it was Ozark based. But I started fantasizing about this stuff at a young age. So Highway 64 is probably the oldest fantasy thought of a song that I have. I mean, it's probably 20 years old.
Oh, wow. But jeez.
Yeah.
Man.
Definitely. But Bama Shores is one of the most fun. I wrote that when I met my wife, actually. And it was a kind of a crazy week because I'm obsessed with Alabama. And I wanted to go back to Alabama to see the concert or the festival.
Oh,
the
Gulf
Shores.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Kings of Leon, Tom Petty, Stevie Wonder, and everybody else that was going to be there.
Oh,
and so I made sure I was there. And as I was about to leave, this was the week that my sister was marrying my wife's brother. And we didn't meet until that day.
Oh, wow.
But I was like, I really think this chick is hot. So I'm like going to ask her if she wants to come with me. And she's got 2 weeks off in a foreign country. And I'm with a bunch of, I'm with my bandmates, and we're all like, you know, pretty awkward, you know, laid back dudes. So, I mean, she was like, this is great. You know, I feel awesome and safe. And she came all the way down there with us. And we ended up like finding a crazy random campsite from some like med students. And we were like, hey, we need to use the underside of your house. No, it wasn't a campsite. It was just underneath this house.
Yeah.
We were like, we need to use this for like camping because the hotels are all sold out.
Oh my gosh.
And it would be awesome if we could camp underneath your house for this festival. So yeah, that was the good time that sparked the song of Bama Shores and brought back all of my Alabama nostalgia, because Alabama was where my pops ended up doing his, his master's degree in archaeology. I was raised both in North Carolina and Alabama.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah. We're not making the playoffs this year, but doesn't look like, unless we have some chaos in the championship games, but it's all right.
Yeah. You know, I'm obsessed with that World Cup right now. I'm a little distracted because we've got two potential countries in my house that could win.
Oh, yeah. See, that's right.
Yeah. Netherlands and the U.S. We'll be seeing what they do this week.
Oh, man. Yeah. Because like you said, your wife, she wasn't born in the U.S. She's
born in Gouda, actually, where the cheese is from, Gouda.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I like Gouda.
Yeah, perks of a marriage are many. My mother-in-law just brought a whole bunch of cheese, and my sister did too when she came to visit, so we've been cheesed out as well.
Oh my gosh, I'm jealous, and when my wife hears this, she's going to be jealous too.
Awesome.
So this whole time, are you still working, doing the construction? Because we were just talking about it at the beginning of this, so I'm assuming that's still going on.
Well, you asked me about like when it hit for like the obsession or for like creating the project. Mm-hmm. I think 3 years ago, after being a carpenter, you know, doing the slur of like everyday work, it just becomes like a maelstrom of like insanity and you know, like,
I know,
colleagues, and you know, it's everybody's going through the same hard time pretty much in their own way and expressing it in some pretty freaking weird ways for the most part. And so eventually I was just got freaking tired of it. And I grew kind of a little bit insane. And I was like, this has to happen. Like, I've got to cut a record. I've got to figure out how to pay for it. And not only that, but my expectation is like way too high in a good way. So I was like, we're going to cut a debut album. We're going to do, you know, this grassroots production, and Moonride Records is going to be the record company. And we're going to have all this stuff laid out. The only thing I think I missed is have enough money to do it all at the same time. So it's turning into like a 2-year process of promotion, but I'm good with that.
You get to enjoy the album more.
Yeah, it became a huge deal for me. And so then I was like, well, I've got to become a contractor. And I don't even know how the F I'm going to do that. So then we decided start a construction company and then divide the profits by, you know, putting half to the music and then some into where we're living and our rent and then the other part into just surviving. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy because I have had a 50% increase in income, but then I'm also like poorer than I was before I started the goal. So I'm like, wow, this is crazy. There's no rest.
Oh man. So that's dedication though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And we've really been enjoying that part of it because there's nothing more, I mean, I don't want to say sound cliche, but there's nothing more American, you know.
That's
true. You come to the place and you give it your all. And I've met so many immigrants, especially because of being married to my wife and also the construction world. And I've met immigrants from South America and from Eastern Europe. And I've just noticed that people come here and they'll have a business up and running within a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's dedication because they were an apprentice when they got here. You know, they might have been doing computer work when they came here. Like literally totally different stories. I've met people whose parents were politicians from other countries and they were like building houses with me.
Wow.
And sending money back to their parents. Oh. It's insane. You get a huge cultural experience in Western North Carolina if you are a construction worker. And the biggest part is if you're actually willing to listen to somebody's life story.
That's true.
You've got a separation of cultures in a way because a lot of the older guys here are kind of stiff and like they're not bad people. They're just stiff and they don't want to talk about anything. And so that becomes the result.
That older generation, they don't like to open up.
Yeah. So I mean, being able to visit Amsterdam at a young age, as my sister started singing opera over there I spent 2 years at a youth hostel. So I got an experience in just listening to folks and part of my job at the youth hostel was to listen to folks.
Oh, wow.
It was like a therapy in a party town, you know, a therapy hostel. People would come into like crying their brain and stay for a couple more days. And we would just get a chance to talk to the guests and also work. And that was part of our mission or whatever. Yeah, it was great.
That's great. And I'm sure all that feeds into the writer in you.
Yeah, it definitely does.
I would imagine you've got like a backlog of ideas at this point between working at the hostel, working in construction, listening to so many stories.
Yeah, it definitely has impacted me a whole lot. I've heard a lot of impactful stories in my life, and I'm really grateful for the people that I've worked with and for the people that I've spoken to about their lives. And I am a sponge, so I can't help it.
That's wonderful, man. But it helps put a different perspective to maybe some of the songs you've been writing. So maybe something that's not the typical point of view of an American guy, you know, from Appalachia even. You know, I'm sure things are a little different with all those unique experiences you've had.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely interrupts the thought process of like standard thinking. And as I was writing songs growing up, they would be influenced by the music that I listened to and kind of just weave like this the whole time. And I would always be so frustrated because I was always like, how do I just write it like a whole album's worth of music? But now that I've got so many songs written over the years, I'm like, I get to compile songs that are old and new and kind of wrap them together.
Yeah. I mean, how often, I guess I should phrase that a little bit differently. I don't often hear about an album where one song was written 15 years ago and the song right after it was written a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's not very often.
That is awesome. I yeah. love that.
The next album will have that more so than this one. Like I said, this last one was a compilation of mostly the last 10 years. So you're dealing with a gap from like 1 to 10. But
right.
I think by the time this next record's cut, some of those songs will finally be 15 full years old.
So did the older songs, did they change a lot when when you started to cut them for the album?
Yeah, they change a whole lot. Yeah, we did. One of my favorite tunes is Bliss, and we did that a totally different way. It was like a ska version of Americana and country and and folk rock at the same time, which was kind of awesome to me because you can really hear the soul coming through, which like you can't hear in ska
right.
at all.
Right.
And that's a huge deal because it kind of shows like, oh, maybe where somebody got the idea of something like that genre from, I guess, because it does pull on a lot of the older notes of just kind of like, I guess, Deep South music and right. Louisiana kind of vibes.
So have you played the album out much since it's come out, or have you had a chance with having the company that you're running? I mean, do you find time to play out and do you have to stay regional?
We did a debut album release at a private amphitheater in Brevard, where I live, well, close to where I live. And that was, that's a place where they do like kind of bigger shows where they like rope in five bands at once and then kind of just run through the line. Oh. That was probably not the best idea, but it was the most satisfying thing that I could be doing because we had about 80 people there, which wasn't super great. It probably would have been better if I'd picked a Nashville venue, but I don't know. There's that part of me that's just like, you know, fuck it, man. I want to be somewhere where I'm really comfortable. And so the amphitheater itself was just amazing acoustic. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it wasn't one of those amphitheaters where it just like takes a baseball bat and knocks the sound right back at your face.
Right.
It was like beautiful. Oh. And then we had lights and sound and hired the right people and just actually hired my producer to do the sound.
Oh, nice. Well, hey, he's familiar with it.
Exactly. Every part of it was tailored. I think we probably nailed 80 forever fans. Like,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, undying. After that, I got to play Albino Skunk Fest, and that was, I think, a couple days later.
Oh, man.
You ever heard of that?
I have not, but now I'm really intrigued.
Dude, Warren Treaty closed out. They were so good.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's a small fest in South Carolina, but it is honky-tonk as hell. And it is... it's a bluegrass festival, but you wouldn't tell. I mean, not after 5 p.m.
Oh, man. Nice.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it was great.
So do you have plans to take this on the road, or are you, since you have your own company, are you kind of keeping it regional?
We're keeping it regional through the winter because of mostly I was too busy to book a whole bunch of things through the winter. And
right.
I was like really nervous about leaving my kids throughout the winter and just all that stuff. So like,
makes sense.
I'm trying to figure out because of the jump from one business to another and finances and things. I think mostly a regional tour is due for the next year, or just like continuous regional plays or gigs through the year. And then 2023 in the fall and winter, I'll probably have some better gigs.
Oh, nice. Well,
yeah,
I hope you can get up to Virginia and come up to my way, because I would love to hear this stuff live.
Where are you in Virginia? Because I've got a gig in Richmond in April.
Oh, I'm a little far out for that. I'm in Winchester, so I'm right on the northern tip. So I'm about 75 miles due west of DC.
Oh yeah, that's kind of cool.
So
I'll talk to my buddy, because the guy who does the American Songcatcher podcast, Nick Williams, we'll do a cool thing where like I could pay him a fixed rate and he'll like book me a whole bunch of cool stuff.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah. It's not probably as awesome as having a booking agent, but I've been really getting by.
Well, we've got some really awesome venues in the local area. In fact, last night I was just at I work in a town called Leesburg in Virginia, and there's a little theater called the Tally Ho, and I do photography. That's what I went to college for. I don't do that as a living anymore, but one of the benefits of doing this podcast is I've made a bunch of contacts and they like my photo work, and so they'll give me tickets and a pass, and I get to go and take my camera and just play around and shoot bands. And last night I got to shoot Wasp at the Tally Ho Theater, the 80s metal band Wasp.
Oh, cool, man. So, that's wild.
It was amazing. So it's I don't even remember where the hell is going with that. I'm still kind of tired from coming in late for that show.
No, it's okay. We're talking about Virginia. Oh. I am coming to Richmond, so I will try to book something in your neck of the woods, because I really want to hit as many towns as possible when I leave, like, that many states over. So I was considering D.C.
There's a bunch of places in D.C., so many different sized venues. I mean, from small clubs, you know, little bars. There's a place called the Pie Shop, which is literally a pie shop, and upstairs there's live music. In Winchester, where I live, they've got some great little venues, you know, anywhere from 50 to like 350 people. You know, it's not huge venues, but it's intimate, and you can get a really nice show there. Like, I saw Ken Stringfellow from the Posies at a 50 seat venue here in Winchester, right around the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it's a charming town. I love Winchester. Home of Patsy Cline.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so how can people follow you? How can they pick up the album and help support you and help you grow into a bigger tour?
Well, I think the best way to do that would be to follow me on the website, follow the email list, because that's really going to help with, like, every little bit. The email lists are so crucial.
Okay.
I mean, I put a pop-up window on there, so literally every time somebody comes to visit my website, they don't only get to see all the YouTube videos at once or the Spotify songs at once. I've tried to set it up in a way where they can just kind of consume everything, you know, at the right time. And I think in about a month or two, they'll be able to buy merch. But
nice.
That way they can kind of become a permanent member of the email list. And I don't send out many emails. So
okay.
I will, once the tour kind of picks up, people might be getting gigs, I guess, pertaining to their area. But
oh, awesome.
That is the best way, because the more and more I dig into the business of this, the more important it is to have that email list. Because let's say I want to do another Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
I would be lost without an email list. Sending that through all my email list followers or whatever, or subscribers, I should say, that would be a really fast way to just kind of let everyone know, like, hey, this is it. Now's the time. Last chance. I will say this, though. I hope I never have to do another Kickstarter.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I love producing my own music, and I loved having 100% control. I will produce Kickstarters until I get picked up by 30 Tigers or Rounder Records. That's what I told myself.
Oh, there you go.
I am going to keep pushing. I'm obsessed with the chase, and I'm obsessed with music.
Oh, that is awesome.
I know it seems weird, because it's like, yeah, who cuts an album and then sits on it? I play a slow game.
last few years have been kind of weird too, so it's...
Yeah, exactly. And I play a slow game.
Like, yeah.
I didn't decide to cut an album last year. I decided to cut an album six to seven years ago.
Yeah.
I started a company to do it 4 years ago. I finally started paying for it from that company 2 years ago. And I have the fruits of my labor now.
Wow.
But so, I mean, it's all in 2 year stints. And I think by year 10, I won't have much to worry about as far as income. But I really do want to give everybody their respect and following what I'm doing, and make sure that every album has cultural reference that is really important to me, pertaining to my culture and where I come from. And also being able to throw in that mishmash of everything else that I've been exposed to over my lifetime.
That is awesome. Well,
I
can't wait to hear what's coming up. But what's the best way for somebody to buy Ballad of Aesop Finn? Or is it on Bandcamp? Or do you prefer streaming? I mean,
Yeah, I probably should put it on Bandcamp to streamline income to me. I guess that's more direct, isn't it? I forgot about a lot of artists do that.
Yeah.
I keep seeing it and thinking, like, I should probably put that on there. Just, so that everybody can enjoy and like I could take advantage of the sales, but no, most of it right now is available on all streaming platforms, and you can purchase it on iTunes or Amazon.
Okay.
I just checked CD Baby earlier, and I think a few people have bought the album from those places over the past month, which is cool. Kind of nice. But no, I think I will be putting it on Bandcamp now that you mention it. I don't think that they're connected with any of the other, at least from what I can tell, I don't think they're connected with any of the other distributors.
No, it's
they're independent, right?
Yeah. It's every independent artist that I've had, and some that aren't, put stuff out on Bandcamp. So, I mean, I see all kinds of stuff out on Bandcamp.
Heck yeah.
What's the social media presence like? Are you on Twitter, Instagram? What platforms do you like?
Right now, I'm strictly on Facebook and Instagram. I've got a TikTok that looks like a redneck's TikTok. It's bad. I mean, you can see a video of me raising a piece of drywall on a lift and putting it in, and it's like, woo! Dude, that one jumped to 100,000 views in like probably 6 days. And I was, I was blown away.
That's crazy.
People really like that. And then I tried a bunch of other songs with it. Never happened again. I tried my own songs with it because I was like, this should reel them in. You know what it was? Jim Croce singing, I can't remember what the name of the song is, but it's like talking to the secretary saying, hey, oh, baby, come on over here.
Oh, gosh, what song is?
Like, sitting here in this rubber suit, rubbing the car. I think it's car wash, but it's not the same car wash that everybody
uses. Right? Yeah, it's not Rolls Royce.
No, man, I love that song. I'm obsessed with Croce.
So, is it Barrett Davis Music on Instagram and Facebook?
Yeah, yes, Barrett Davis Music on Instagram. Facebook is Barrett Davis. The website's BarrettDavisMusic.com, and Spotify is Barrett Davis, and the rest same. So,
nice and easy, nice and consistent. That makes it easier.
Yes, than studying.
Yeah.
Luckily, not many people have my name.
Right. That's true.
Very convenient.
Well, yeah. I really appreciate all the time you spent. I love the album, and I'm definitely trying to help as many people hear it as I can.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for talking to me.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.